So this movie, A Quiet Place, came out just over the last couple of weeks, and I haven't seen it yet, Chris. I'm dying to see it. And I created my own little Quiet Place moment here. This is Tim Ray Millington. That's Chris Mueller, and you're listening to Trending.
Right. What was your Quiet Place moment? What does that mean?
My Quiet Place moment, I was outside. It was Saturday afternoon. I just finished teaching for the day. I've got my book. I'm reading about the fall and the snake in the garden. And I'm like kind of dozing off. The book's going down, like sitting on my stomach now. And I start thinking, though, about a snake. And what if a snake slithered up right now as I'm sitting outside? I'm terrified of snakes. I'm also thinking, well, we should be more scared of snakes if you think about it. I think my fear of snakes comes from the Bible story as a child, right? Well, I'm thinking, what if it were to slither over the top of me? Would I freeze? Would I be able to do anything? What would I do if this like huge rattler's there?
Okay.
And then boom, the front door slams shut and I just about fall off of the bench.
Yeah, that is absolutely kind of getting away with yourself there.
Well, I heard A Quiet Place is incredible and shows phenomenal examples of male and female characters, mother father roles, and children's roles. And it just stood out to me, Chris, that when danger presents itself, how masculinity and femininity truly do show themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do not like the scary films. It's one of those things where my tendency is that my imagination would get away with myself. But my niece and I were discussing this film because she was getting ready to go see it. She's my goddaughter. She's 16 or almost 16. And she was going to go see it. And her thought was, it looks more suspenseful than scary. And so thus, it would be okay. She was okay with going to see it.
I'm all for the suspense, not so much the horror. But suspense, I heard it was fantastic. I heard a story about how one person in the whole place was starting to eat his candy wrapper, and it's so quiet during the movie, like everyone stopped even eating their popcorn, and he's like wrestling in his bag trying to get his candy, and then all of a sudden half the crowd like gangs up on him. Dude, are you serious?
Wow.
And his buddy's like, shut up, and whacks him in the chest, and they're all embarrassed trying to like quiet down.
That's a lot of pressure at a movie.
Well, that's how quiet it is.
Yeah.
That's how quiet it is.
I feel like we need to see more movies because we did this last time with Black Panther too. We were like, hey, I haven't actually seen it yet, but it sounds amazing.
I know. The time to go and see movies though. I feel like a lot of people with MoviePass though are going all the time now.
Yeah, MoviePass sounds a very interesting thing to me, especially because I have a plethora of children.
Yes.
It might be a nice way to do that.
Yeah. I know my brother and sister both picked it up. My brother's like, yeah, I've seen Black Panther 4 times. I'm like, I still want to see it.
I know. I'm still trying to see Thor. My daughter and I were talking about how we need to watch that this weekend.
The new one?
Yeah, totally.
I saw that one. I guess it's just not my cup of tea. I love the Marvel movies, but it was just a little too goofy.
The Thor movies have been kind of hit or miss. I will say that. They have not been, like you look at Iron Man 1 compared to Thor 1, and it's just not even the same ballpark.
Right. You know? Very different storylines for sure.
Yep.
Well, some good news over here. I don't think we get enough of this sometimes because I think traditional media anymore, like the idea is to talk about what scares, what's worrying. And Grant, on Trending, Chris, we talk about the tough topics so that you can handle those topics with joy though, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, here's some exciting stuff. I was telling my new roommate, because she's from Nebraska, her home state just passed a new budget that in fact has defunded Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, this shouldn't be controversial. I mean, you know, there's the majority of people in America don't think that Planned Parenthood or abortion should be funded federally. We have laws against this. So the fact that states could come in and say, you know what, our population doesn't want it. We don't want to pay for the murder of infants in the womb. So we're going to defund Planned Parenthood. Good for you, Nebraska. Hooray for the Plain States.
This is awesome news. It's a 2-year long budget. So that means that Planned Parenthood will not have funding. It's not just passed in your local House and Senate, but the governor has signed up on it. And he said, we are pro-life people. And so our laws and what we fund, it's going to reflect that.
Yeah, and what I'd love to see is the reallocation of those funds to, you know, pregnancy centers that are helping and supporting people who are dealing with unplanned pregnancy. I mean, that would be so beautiful if they took that next step. We have to see, I haven't looked through the budget, you know, line by line, but that would be fantastic.
Well, and what's neat is that there are government programs helping to support in some areas our crisis pregnancy centers. But either way, you look at crisis pregnancy centers, what they're offering is 100% free.
Yep.
And it is out of the bottom of just the love of people's hearts. And it is there in the community. How can we better help crisis pregnancy centers to get the word out there into the high schools and college campuses?
Yeah. Why does Planned Parenthood get like an open door into all of our high school campuses? But again, like a crisis pregnancy center. Wow. We don't want to get involved in that. It's too political. You know,
right?
It's just crazy talk.
The drama that is taking place right now over pro-life, pro-choice. We're going to be talking about that more later in the show next week as well. But just what's happening, I think that it is just an awesome opportunity to rejoice and celebrate. And, you know, we're living in a time where there's this challenge, I think, when it comes to parenting, where, you know, the fathers don't really have to have responsibility with the idea of contraception. We have the Me Too movement, all of these women who are super angry. And I think just justifiably so, women who have been sexually abused.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You kind of understand why they've gotten to where they're at. And a friend of mine this week, Chris, actually sent me this quote from St. Jose Maria Escrivá. And it's talking about how there's a need for a crusade of manliness, essentially, and purity to counteract the savage work, basically, of those who think just men are beasts.
You know, and that, I think that's fantastic. The reality is that is the brush that masculinity has been painted with in our culture, is that all men are monsters and we need to get rid of, you know, masculinity completely. And then, you know, we get that whole, now we're into, you know, what does it mean to be a man? And I think we do need to have that conversation. You know, what does it mean to be a man? We absolutely have that conversation. But I think, you know, our society sometimes de-emphasizes that or de-incentivizes it, right? And so you end up in these situations where we've now said, if a woman gets pregnant because you were doing things you shouldn't have been doing outside of marriage, then the easy way is abortion. Or even if you then do have that child, a lot of times government social programs favor a household without a father. So it doesn't make sense to then get in and be married. So, yeah, I think, you know, he is the Saint Jose Maria is absolutely right.
Well, and you look at the wisdom of the saints sometimes and these simple little statements looking at, yeah, people think men are beasts today. And we need that gallantry. We need that heroism that is so important in today's modern day culture. Remember, there was a story just a couple weeks ago, we didn't cover it, but after Hurricane Harvey, there was one like 17-year-old kid, Chris, who went through and he saved something like 20 people. Just a he's 13 years old.
Yeah, just with his boat, right?
Yeah, with his boat. And it wasn't even a boat. It was like a blow up mattress, actually.
Really?
And he received some award over the last couple of weeks. But I was just looking at it. His buddy called him up. Hey, we need help. He goes, checks out the situation, gets a blow up mattress and comes swimming along to help people who can't swim.
Yeah, I mean, Hurricane Harvey, we definitely saw so many examples of gallantry, of heroism, you know? Hey, back to the Planned Parenthood thing. Did you hear the story? And this wasn't on our show notes this week, so I apologize. I'm springing it on you. But the Trump administration reached out to Planned Parenthood and said, we will give you 100% of your funding if you stop doing abortions.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that happened actually about a year ago, right after President Trump took office. Ivanka Trump reached out to Cecil Richards back then, and then she did it again. Hey, like, I'm okay. I'm in favor of women's rights and so forth. However, stop funding abortion. And Cecil Richards has just absolutely refused, you know, and the fact that the offers come to the table time and time again now, since this presidency is taking over, not that we agree with the other work Planned Parenthood's doing with contraception and so forth. However, you look at it and they've made it very clear, we're in the business of abortion.
They're in the business of abortion. And that's why all of those talking points that, you know, oh, this is just a minuscule part of what we do and da, 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 which are all nonsense. It just really straight comes down to, no, this is the non-negotiable for them. This is the one thing that is their identity. This is what they do. It's abortion.
And there's no question about it. And I think that this is something in the culture, as we're looking at this, being aware that they're not here for that prenatal care. I remember I was even working with a good-willed organization of faith recently, and they were wanting me to write a piece. And I hit such a backlash from some of the members of the organization because they kept saying, well, we want you to write this piece about Planned Parenthood. However, we don't want you to say that, like, they do anything wrong. Like, I couldn't use any of the undercover investigations. They wouldn't let me say that they don't actually provide a prenatal care, or just providing the statistics, right, of where people have asked. And they're like, because Planned Parenthood does great things. I'm like, please tell me what great things they do. I think we've gotten stuck in our heads that Planned Parenthood helps women, but they don't.
But they don't. I mean, and again, we've seen time and again, they victimize women. Women who are caught in abusive situations or human trafficking, Planned Parenthood is the go-to for those abusers.
Right. This last week, Gwyneth Paltrow celebrated her son, 12 years old, Moses. And on his birthday, she put together this Instagram post talking about, oh, happy birthday. You're the sweetest, most brilliant. And then she puts this hashtag that is trending across the internet. And it was, I was born the day you were born.
It's a weird hashtag. Well, I mean, it's kind of cool, yeah, right? But it's a little strange.
Well, part of me kept thinking, that's really awesome, right? She is saying, you know, I came to my full womanhood, essentially. I came to fully understand and know myself when you were born. I'm thinking, oh, what about Apple, your older daughter, right? I only remember that because I remember the name. Everyone's going, oh my gosh, Gwyneth Paltrow named her daughter Apple.
I remember when they did that, yeah. In fact, that's a joke that's come up with my kids. That they, you know, if they don't like their names, they could have been named Apple.
Could have been named Apple. I had a friend actually who would go to Starbucks, and she would, when she was there, would give the name Apple or something really weird to the Starbucks barista. So then when they'd announce it, they'd be like, Apple? And they'd feel really awkward calling Apple out into the crowd.
Yeah, you know, the Gwyneth Paltrow was born the day you were born. I think there is something beautiful about that. Like I said, that, you know, we come into that full we know ourselves better at when we know ourselves as parents. Like, my kids reveal things about me all the time because they're like little mirrors that I look in all the time, right? When I see my 13-year-old struggle with his, you know, emerging masculinity and maybe, you know, acting out in ways that aren't healthy, I have to understand that a lot of times that's an echo. Like, when he's stomping up the stairs, did I stomp up the stairs? No, never.
Never.
That, when, you know, wildly accusing his siblings of things, when I'm yelling, where are my keys? Who took my keys? You know, okay, that's a reflection on me. So in some respects, I get it. Like, those kids, I am more who I am because of them.
Right.
You know, and they definitely make me better, for sure.
Talking about who I am, that is Chris Mueller, and this is Timory Millington. You are listening to Trending. So much going on in the news with this week, and I look at this story with Gwyneth Paltrow, and I just think, so many women in our modern day pop culture are having children. You know, we talked about Kylie Jenner just a couple weeks ago and how she's just discovering herself and how happy she is having a child. Grant, she might be overly obsessed now with getting her pre-baby body back. However, you see a lot of these women who are saying, I found myself. I became a better me when I had a child. And so when we look at this right now, we will be right back on Trending talking about Gwyneth Paltrow and more.
Hey, you're listening to Trending. This is Chris. I'm here with Timory, and we're talking about babies.
Talking about thabies. What are those?
Thabies. Thabies is a... Okay. No, we're talking about babies, and just we're talking about people who are a little strange, I personally think. So there's this movement, right, to raise genderless children, which, again... There's so many weird ins and outs of this story, but the idea is that you can raise a child, and irrelevant are their sexual parts, that they're just, you know, their gender is not anywhere related to that. So you don't reveal what their physical, you know, sex is. You just kind of raise them as a they, not a he or a she.
We were prepping for the show this week, and Chris sent me this text over, and just, I could tell you were so... as a father, I think you even said at one point, like, my heart is just hurting looking at this and seeing these kids who are being raised essentially not just even in a lie, but in the midst of total chaos and confusion.
Yeah, it's, you know, this, and there's an article, and it just goes on and on. It's a very long article, and what's interesting is it's not even the kids, but the parents who are in this ideology. And it's so, there's like, it's interesting because, like, there's one of the parents, for instance, was a woman who had transitioned to be non-binary. But she was then raising a child as a thaby with a woman who was a woman. And there's this contradiction, right? Because they're saying the gender, the sexual, you know, reality of this child isn't their gender. But the contradiction is then, why are you then changing your outward appearance to reflect, you know, like, your physically, you know, why then would a gender reassignment surgery be necessary if you're a man with, you know, you're a woman with man parts or a man with woman parts, then why do you need a gender reassignment if those sexual parts are irrelevant? It was just such like this weird, like, you know, running, I can't even explain it on air because it's so kind of wrapped up and confusing, you know?
This is one of those things when we've been preparing for the show, talking about the transgender issue. It's heart-wrenching and it's difficult because here I am saying, okay, here's this man. He identifies as a woman, but he's a man, but he refers to himself as a she. When you get to the point when someone is explaining something and it is just so confusing, you've got to really pay attention to that red flag that is flashing. So then take a listen to this story here. There's a young couple. They're awaiting their first child, Bobby and his wife, Leslie. They decide that as they're looking around, perfect pregnancy, testing. Nothing's going wrong. It's weeks away. A little while before, they had revealed what the sex of the baby was to family and friends via an email. And then not long before they have the child, it sounded like almost a matter of weeks, they decide, well, we actually want to raise this child as a they.
Yeah, the weirdest part was it was based on a Facebook story that he saw. Like he encountered something on Facebook and he was like, oh, we should do this, you know?
He quickly got involved with Facebook groups and pages where it was, I guess, a community of people who are also raising their children, not acknowledging their biological sex. So to the point that he even asked the medical professionals in the room, hey, when the baby's born, you know, basically don't take that look between the legs, don't acknowledge it, and please respect us and our decision to just refer to our child as a they. And essentially, this is what we've even seen them asking their family members to do to best honor their child.
Yeah, it's a really weird thing. And here's a couple of my issues. One, this is an experiment you're running on a child, right? Like, right. And that's not ethical at any point to experiment on children like this, right? We don't know what the outcome of this is. We don't know how that works for the long term. Well, we do know from other studies that long-term effects or outcomes are not good for people who have been gender reassigned. But now you're running an experiment on your child. Right. And you know, what's the long-term effect going to be? At what point do you say this isn't working? At what point are you so committed because you started a website about this that you can't then look at the child objectively because you're committed to an ideology, not to the child?
Right.
Really weird. Yeah.
Well, and it's something that I've talked about often on the show, and that is that there was a pioneer in sex reversal surgeries or changes, right? John Hopkins Medical, they were really working on being the first people to make that sexual change. It was back in the 80s, and it was what was done. It was every time there was, say, a child born with ambiguous genitalia, they would just give the child female genitalia, not even testing the DNA where we can look at the chromosomes and see this is either male or female, right? Again, you guys have heard me, for any longtime listeners, have talked about this over and over again. But what happened down the road was that around the time of puberty, later on in years, those who were actually biologically male, just maybe ambiguous genitalia, actually identified more so with male characteristics.
Right, because they had male hormones. They had all the underlying characteristics of what it means to be a male, because genetically, they were male.
Exactly. Well, and you see the statistics where kids say, oh, I'm not sure whether I'm male or female. That ambiguous questioning, right, that confusion in their hearts and their minds that's taking place. After puberty, over 80% of them usually end up figuring things out. It's very rare
right. That
these kids end up still questioning whether they're male or female. But now you're putting social pressure, social experiments to prove a point. And that's what just kills me, is that the parents of this child at one point says, change has to happen and we are doing it. That means that this is something actively that you are doing to your child to make a change that you believe is correct.
Yeah, it's in a sense, it's looking at, like we're looking at a funhouse mirror, right? Because I agree that children shouldn't be sexualized. And I think we're doing that way too young, right? And so there's this time of life, like my 2-year-old right now, he tries on everyone's shoes. He tries on my shoes. He tries on my wife's shoes. He likes to walk around in my shoes. He likes to wear, he likes shoes. Like he has this pair of blue shoes that are about 3 sizes too big that he wears everywhere he goes because he likes those shoes, right? We've seen him play with the girls' toys. We've seen him play with the boys' toys. And there's not like, that's not a thing to freak out about, right? Because he's, yeah. Two. But so that's healthy, right? We don't want to like, and I get the rebelling against these kind of stereotypes of masculinity and femininity. You know, like my wife is way better at math and science than I have ever hoped to be, right? Which the male stereotype would say, oh no, she's a woman and she can't do that stuff. She manages the finances because if she didn't, we would be broke, right? And that's a stereotype would say, no, the man has to take care of the checkbook, all those things. I get getting away from stereotypes and just saying, no, be the man you are, be the woman you are. But the funhouse mirror comes in when you say, no, there is no man, there is no woman, that none of that really exists. It's not, you know, what we've done is we have somehow misconstrued a stereotype with what it means to be a man, and the rebelling against that is so weird that now we're saying that we're going to pretend my baby doesn't have, you know, male parts if it has male parts until he decides he has male parts. It's like the emperor has no clothes.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is basically you get that both men and women have been wrongly put into a box.
Absolutely.
And so that makes sense that we've rebelled against that in some ways. However, does that mean we completely obliterate what's already there?
Right. And so how much of this is because we've lost rites of passage?
Right.
Right. We don't have this point where young men are, they have this rite of passage where they come into manhood. And so we're projecting that on younger and younger boys. And you see like 2-year-olds, you know, trying to act like tough guys or, you know, or emulate this kind of false masculinity they see, or women, the same thing. They're used to, like, in many cultures, you had like a quinceañera, right? Where the woman would come of age. We don't have that anymore. And so we see, you know, 12-year-olds being super sexualized. And, you know, so how much of this modern craziness is because we've lost all of the historical things that helped keep us healthy, that helped keep masculinity healthy, that helped keep femininity healthy.
Right. And I think about, you know, taking this back biblically, you think about Jesus, and when he's a young child, he ends up traveling with his family to Jerusalem, right, for some of the Jewish Passover and feasts, and they're there traveling, and Joseph and Mary are on their way back, and they suddenly realize that Jesus is missing. They go back searching for him, and we hear the story as children growing up, right? We meditate on when we pray the rosary, but I remember when we're looking at this more deeply, well, what's happening is Jesus is of an age where he's becoming a man. And so he's taken responsibility and he's chosen to stay here in the temple. And he's looking at his father and mother after 3 days, the agony of that. And they're saying, why have you done this to us, son? And he's like, I'm in my father's house. I'm doing my work. You want me to just stay with you, but there's something I'm doing. And I'm only like 12 years old.
I love it because it's absolutely what a middle schooler would do, right? The perfect middle schooler is still a middle schooler. Just saying, that's, you know, he does. He makes this choice. He's, yeah, he goes, why wouldn't you look for me first? Like, you know, like that's, it's so middle school, you know. And Mary's, I love Mary because she's, you know, you scared us to death. You can almost feel her shaking Jesus a little bit, you know.
But at that time in the historical context, the age that he was in doing that was the age where he comes into his masculinity. There's a separation from his father, right, that takes place. And so I think that when we look at, you know, the bar mitzvahs, all of the different celebrations of different cultures, like you said, Chris, it makes a difference in finding ways to encourage people to rediscover their femininity, masculinity. This is something that takes place, say, when someone's experienced sexual abuse, that they're encouraged to rediscover their femininity, masculinity, to be in touch even just with their emotions and what they're feeling, not just acting out on them immediately.
Right. Yeah. And again, if you're listening to this and you heard her say, get in touch with your femininity, that doesn't mean put on pink and wear lace. You know what I mean? It means be in touch. Like, what does that mean to be a woman? Really struggle with those questions. Or masculinity, same thing. It doesn't mean go out and play football. You know, it means, what does that mean to have the strength that I've been given? How is that used? How do I live that out?
Yeah. How? And I think that we can start in many ways with, how can I be a better person? Even just the emotions that I am experiencing, how can I process them before acting out on them, right? And I think that this is something anyone can work on, right?
Absolutely.
Of not just responding when we're angry or frustrated. And we're going to talk about a story kind of tying into this in many ways in just a bit here. But I think that taking responsibility of what we feel and bringing it into the realm of reality is so important.
Right. And we're disconnecting more and more and more with that. I mean, again, we're jumping off, but in, you know, you look at the connecting what we feel to reality. How many people are dealing with depression because they're looking at all these images on social media that aren't reality, and they're projecting that onto their reality, you know, and how they feel because of that then becomes what's real to them. And now they're dealing with depression out of it.
So many things, I think, to really look at, and especially the topic of depression. We're going to talk about that on the next show. Be sure to stay tuned, but just this addiction to antidepressants that we're seeing and the struggle of people coming off of them. Stay tuned because that will be something that we're discussing. Meantime, how about that male birth control? We're going to bring that back in on the next show. We are trending. This is Timmeri Millington. That is Chris Mueller. Where can we find you on social media, Chris?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at C. Mueller Tweets or on the web at chrismueller.co.
And you can find me at Timmeri, that's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And you can also listen to the show on YouTube and my Facebook page. So I've been hearing a lot of people recently saying he just needs to get snipped. Every time I have heard that lately, Chris, I'm like, why are we talking about this in public? And here we are in your radio, invading your space, talking about vasectomies.
Yeah. It is such a given. Yeah, I don't hear snipped as much as I hear fixed.
Oh, see, I've been around all women.
Okay.
And the women just, he needs to get snipped. Yeah, my husband got snipped. And I'm like, oh, didn't need to know that about your life. And I'm just sitting here thinking, and I talked to you about this earlier. In the Catholic Church, vasectomies are just so clear. It's a big no. Like, you are mutilating your body. You're altering your body. You're no longer open to life. This one flesh union, right? The two become one. Even though you can physically, you know, be drawn together in that way, there's something that is missing that is natural in the anatomy and the creation of the body and how the biochemical reactions come together. And there are consequences when we don't follow that. And so, as I've heard women recently, like, it's been a big topic that I've been surrounded by lately. He just needs to be snipped. Like, you're asking him to change his life, no big deal. Just like you ladies today cannot stand being on hormonal contraception a lot of the time because of the consequences.
Right, but when you have a child, they absolutely say, what, would you like to have a tubal at this point? If you have a C-section, it's almost like, then check the next box, it'd be tubal ligation. You know, it's the thing about this, the vasectomy is it is so easy. And that's the mindset that people have. It's so easy. It's like a weekend procedure. In fact, I don't know if you knew this, during March Madness, like, a lot of these vasectomy clinics actually offer incentives because the idea is you have it done, then you can hang out at home, watch the games. Like, it's literally tied. They run specials and have deals for March Madness so that you can just, that you can take a couple of days off, recover from vasectomy, and watch basketball.
I'm like, dude, it's painful. Just remember that. And I think that this is something, like, we don't talk about a lot. It's kind of a taboo topic. And I think men also don't like to talk about their pain amongst other men sometimes as well. And so it's an issue that is not being discussed, I think, as fully as it should be.
Yeah. And it's not without, you know, I think there's this idea that you have it and there's never any complications. There
right.
are complications. So what, how the procedure works, it just, you know, is basically there's no exit for, you know, the seed, as it were. I'm trying to, there might
for
be the kids
sperm,
listening. There might be kids listening. So I'm trying to be a little sensitive here. So you're still producing, but you're not releasing.
Yeah.
Well, that creates a problem because this is meant to be released. It's not meant to stay in the body. It's pretty potent stuff we're talking about here.
Well, and that's what's happening. You prevent, right, that from coming through from a fertilization of an egg because the process isn't taking place. So what's happening is, I'm sorry if you have children, I think most people know this isn't really a children-friendly show, but the sperm rate still continues to remain high. Over, you know, 50,000 cells per minute are being produced. So what happens is there is then a caused blockage, right? That's
right.
Taking place in the body. This can be tremendously painful. But then if you think about it, the sperm is a very, very powerful and potent thing. It can break through the strong layers of the egg.
Well, it's meant to be invasive.
To penetrate.
What it's meant for. Right,
exactly. And so when you look at this, Chris, it is just killing me because what's happening is then there's this autoimmune reaction that's happening in a vast majority of men now, maybe not immediately, but later on, where now the body's being, in some ways, the immune system's reacting to the sperm and it's creating antibodies where it's now attacking itself.
Right. You know, I think the hard part for a lot of men in the church and out of the church is they hear all that, but they don't fully understand why not? Well, what's the issue? And what am I supposed to do? Just have like 15 kids, you know? And so they, you know, we talk about, you're not allowed to vasectomy, and all they hear is rules, you know? And so eventually it's just wah, 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 and no one's listening anymore. And so, you know, we have this beautiful teaching of theology of the body. We have the Pope's teaching on the sanctity of life and marriage. But we have to find a way to articulate that better, because if not, it's just, we know that the majority of people are just blowing it off. And it's not even so much that they're ignoring it as they're just blissfully, or not blissfully, they're just unaware of it.
Right. And well, and you look at the information that's out there, there is solid information looking at the scientific sides of why it's harmful. And I think sometimes when you look at the science, it can go, okay, if this is going wrong in my body as a result of having a procedure that truly is mutilating your body, right? Whether, even if you don't want to think about it to that extreme, you are forcing a body part to no longer function as it should.
Well, that's it. You're breaking something.
Right. You're breaking something.
Yeah.
So there are naturally going to be side effects. And Dr. H.J. Roberts has done extensive research looking into the impact for over 25 years. And what he says, talking about vasectomies, is essentially the fact that no other operation, he says, is performed on humans even approaches the degree and duration of multiple immunological responses that occur post-vasectomy. He's saying the immunological responses are so intense because the potency of sperm is so strong that when it is then attacking essentially your own body. And it's not even that it's attacking. It's that the immune system says, what is this? It's right. not supposed to be here. I don't know what to do. You're seeing major health issues that are playing out. And what man wants to say, oh yeah, I've basically been neutered. This is the cause.
Right. Or my, you know, I hurt down low and, you know, what do I do about that? And so they retreat to the internet, right? And then you right. go message boards, you do those things. So you don't, you know, men don't even get physicals, right?
Right. They avoid that. Why would they go for this one?
Right. Exactly. You know, it, and A, this stuff you never hear about.
Right. And you look at some of the impact, the diseases as a result of it, prostate cancer, which people say, oh, it can't. Well, over, it's between 2 and 33% of men. And those are people who are willing to talk about it later, say that they have had some form of pain or side effects, prostate cancer, arthritis, erratic dysfunction. You have testicular pain, inflammation, chronic pain, you know, testicular cancer. I could go on and on and on. Diabetes, which is also an autoimmune response, right. the body shutting down in response. The autoimmune responses and the autoimmune diseases that are so common today are just, there's a plethora of them. Adrenal fatigue. The body is no longer functioning as it should. Bottom line.
So you mean that when you break something, like an integral system of the body, it has effects afterwards?
Maybe.
Very strange.
And, you know, we're talking a lot about women and the impact of hormonal contraception on women, but I think that so often we just brush men aside as, hey, they should be able to bear the brunt of the pain for something now and again. And so it's not something that's discussed.
Right. No, it isn't. And again, people don't want to hear it too, though. I mean, that, you know, that's the reality of it. We know that there's all kinds of procedures that people do, whether that be for, you know, cosmetic reasons or, you know, for trying to not have children. They have repercussions. But the problem is, you know, you don't, is the pain of the repercussion perceived to be as great as the pain of not doing it? And most people are saying, well, you know, A, we downplay the repercussions of this because we don't want to hear it. We want to hear that there's an easy answer. Right. We want to hear that life doesn't have suffering, that life doesn't require discipline, that life doesn't have me make hard choices. So I'm just going to do something really easy. I'm just going to go get snipped because it makes it sound small. Or I'm going to get fixed. Makes that even better, right? But you don't go say, I'm going to go into the surgery and I'm going to have a guy take a scalpel to my nethers and cut something, you know?
Well, they can also just make a hole now, which is supposed to be a little less invasive and it'll create the blockage. But I'm like, either way, oh my gosh, I remember growing up being in workshops talking about STDs. And I remember the guys sitting in the back, crossing their legs, rocking back and forth, leaving the room, just hearing about the side effects from STDs.
Right.
And here men are sometimes willing to do this for what? I've heard some men say, oh, well, now it lessens the debate with my spouse or partner over hormonal contraception. This can just be it. But what is still the goal? The goal is to not have children.
Right. Right. Because again, people think that if you either you use contraception or you have 15 children, that's the assumption.
Well, and that's where, you know, what the church teaches on being open to life doesn't mean every time you have sex, you're going to have a child. It means that you are open to any life that will come about. You are not creating any type of barrier method or hormone blocking, right? The ovulation or creating mucus within the fallopian tube, preventing the fertilized egg, which means, aka new genetically cleared DNA human life from implanting where it needs to be nourished and grow. Like contraception's working both as an abortifacient at times, that's killing a new life and preventing from that new life from ever starting. So the church is here teaching that we need to be open to life. And if there is something that allows us, right, to monitor and prepare for our families, it's going to be something that requires a lot of sacrifice. And that is that you're not just going to simply pop a pill or have a procedure, but you are actually going to have to be selfless in the moment. You are going to have to recognize, we can't have a baby right now. This isn't good timing. We're going to wait to have sex when we're not fertile, right? In order to prevent a child from coming about. It's not that you're not open to life. It's saying, oh, we're going to be planning here just a little bit.
You know, I think we're kind of veering into NFP here, right? And it's interesting. Like I said, I've got a plethora of kids. And so it's funny. I feel like sometimes as a spokesperson, when you've got six kids, people go, yeah, really. But I feel like sometimes NFPs, it's characterized in two ways. One, it's characterized when you go to the doctor and they say, what are you planning on using birth birth control. Like, well, we do NFP. And they go, it's voodoo. That's one way. Or two, they kind of, it's kind of put forth as like, it's just like walking through a field of daisies, holding hands together, just knowing your partner. Oh dear, give me the chart so I can record, you know, and that's not true either. And so I think what you said, like there's some sacrifice involved. Absolutely true. You know, I was actually kind of fascinated as I learned about natural family planning with my wife, that most women don't actually understand what's happening in their body any given day, any given month, and that has tremendous effects on how men and women are even attracted to each other,
right?
And so if you're raising kids and you're not teaching them about their bodies this way, well, then your daughter or your son doesn't understand that the person they're dating, if they put themselves in intimate situations at certain times of the month, their bodies are doing everything they can to bring that to consummation by pumping out, you know, hormones and pheromones so that you're even more attracted to each other. I mean, that's valuable information if you're trying to live a chaste life.
And I think that because of that, even as young as 12 and 13, you know, we see young people going through puberty even earlier. And now they're faced with these challenging moments. You know, parents aren't around as much. You have all these extracurricular school activities. They're not home. So like you said, that environment is really difficult. And, you know, you're seeing that, you know, in general, we already live in somewhat of a sex-crazed television world, right? And we see this stimulation constantly taking place on TV of, you know, always going right for the intimate moments that I think is so wiring for the brain that you add that wiring of the brain in with the pheromones. And pheromones, for those who don't know, because I think some people are like, oh yeah, those are kind of like the love hormones, right? Yes, in some ways.
Tim, I'm going to have to cut you off. Looks like we're going into break. We're going to have to pick this up on the other side for sure. We are not done with this conversation.
I remember in college, we were talking about natural family planning, and there was a lot of debate taking place in the classroom about when it is and isn't okay to use natural family planning, because it can be used in some ways as a form of birth control, just without the chemicals. You can have a contraceptive mindset about natural family planning. This is Trending. I'm Timmeray Millington. That is Chris Mueller, my co-host. And we're talking just a minute ago about vasectomies, and now we're also talking about natural family planning and how natural family planning is the answer to, you know, all the health risks of hormonal contraception, the impact on the man, which is severe. People just aren't talking about it. If you didn't catch that, be sure to go and find the archive to listen to a little bit about the impact of vasectomies on a man. But I remember when we're sitting there in the classroom, Chris, there were these people who were very militant. Oh, you shouldn't use natural family planning, and people who were, overly maybe okay with using NFP. And, you know, I've seen this with a lot of my peers getting married, and well, we're just going to use NFP for the first 5 years while we go to school and travel and do these things.
See, I think that's crazy. It's a totally different viewpoint. I hate this concept of we're going to get our life totally in order and do everything, and then we'll add children when we're ready to break it. Like, I just, kids enrich your life. Like, I don't know. I just, different thing there. I just think bring kids into your life early, because you try to get everything in order. Then when you bring them in, it's going to be even worse. I mean, not even worse, but I mean, like, does that make sense? Like, people avoid children because they think they're going to mess up their lives. They're not going to mess up their lives unless they set up lives without children that don't account for children.
Yeah. And well, then what you're talking about is a contraceptive mindset about NFP.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But at the same time, on the opposite side, I think people can be overly zealous of, like, you can only use it in really certain circumstances. And we're forgetting the sacrifice. I remember my teacher sitting there going, you try using NFP, going, okay, it's not a good time right now, honey. And he's like, I'm laying there next to the love of my life, tapping my fingers, twiddling my thumbs, being like, okay, this is not easy right now.
Yeah, you know, okay, and I can speak from, you know, firsthand experience here, because I have a wife and we do have 6 kids, and we had a baby in December. And I'm so happy to have this young person in my life, this little guy. He's so amazing. But he is an NFP child, right? We were not planning on having number 6. We were trying to space out or not have any more children at that point, and for a lot of different reasons. And we know exactly the day my wife ovulated. We know exactly the day that we conceived him. And so by the laws of NFP, he shouldn't exist. He shouldn't have been born. But that's where the openness to life comes in, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's two misconceptions, that it's either like walking through a field of daisies holding hands, or it's voodoo. Neither one is true. It is hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard to sit with, you know, to be with your spouse, like your professor says, lying in bed next to someone, and to want that intimacy, right? And then to have that sense when we're not, for various reasons, but there's a feeling of rejection that comes with that too. Like you can feel like what's going on. Those are difficult waters to navigate. You know, there was a great article in Catholic News Agency called Misunderstanding NFP, where Catholics and non-Catholics get it wrong. And they did deal with that overzealousness of, is it you're never allowed to use NFP unless someone has like a terminal illness? Or are there other reasons? And the author uses this example, like, you know, people don't have, you know, marital relations sometimes just because someone has a headache, right? If it's okay not to conceive a child because you have a headache, it's okay to not conceive a child because you're struggling financially at that time, or you're maybe just feeling psychologically overwhelmed at that time. It isn't as stringent as you have to be open to life every single time, and NFP is terrible and it gets some things, but it isn't we're never gonna have a baby, and if we have a baby, it's gonna be the end of the world either. It's saying, Lord, at this point, this is our will. We submit that to your will. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, the sanctifying comes in, I think.
Well, a lot of people refer to it sometimes as supernatural family planning, that you are submitting to God's will. You're open to life no matter what. And Grant, the science of NFP is phenomenal. We can know to the hour, in fact, when a woman is actually ovulating. And we know that the sperm can last a certain number of days within the woman's body. And that while that egg life is short, the sperm life is longer. And and the potency and potential of creating new life is present. And so there's a window of days when you could or could not have a child. And that's monitored for those who don't know, because I'm always answering these questions online by monitoring, cervical mucuses, and also monitoring the temperature of the body, because the temperature rises and spikes as estrogen and progesterone and all of the different chemicals of her body are changing throughout the month. And
right. That's like Creighton method. You know, you can also do the Marquette method, which brings in actually monitoring hormones using the Clear Blue monitor. And there's a whole system there where you're then looking at the different hormones that rush during ovulation too. I mean, so there's actually a lot of ways, there's a number of different ways to track this, and they're effective, but the reality is you're still giving God the freedom to say, no, I've got something better planned than what you had planned. In our case, he's 3 months old. That's baby number six, you know, and I would never say he wasn't wanted, but he wasn't necessarily planned. He wasn't what we had in mind, but God's plans were better than our plans.
And I think that's the providence of God's timing. No matter where you are in life, whether it's struggling with a career change or a home change or a big move or a relationship or a child, you know, I think that our timing is always what we want, but it's not what God has in store for us to be the best versions of ourselves.
Yeah. Okay. Honest talk about NFP though. So we have number six, and I try not to use my kids' names on air or on social media because they have the right to a private life. Side note. But we have number six. We're doing NFP. He was conceived in a way that should have been technically, I guess, impossible, but he was. You know, God did what we want to do. But you're now on the other side of that, and you're like, well, whoa, now what do we do? You know, and so then that, I think that's when the trust really comes even more, because we're still in the same situation we were in before. We're trying to now limit the number of children we have. And then saying, God, we trust you, but now do we lock it down? I mean, is it like you never? And so trying to navigate those waters again it's scary in some respects, and it is challenging. And there is, you know, you talk about that sanctification of saying, you know, that I love you means more than I want you, right? Mm-hmm. And living that out. And that's, you know, that's definitely a challenging thing when you do want to have that emotional connection, you want to have that physical connection. And yeah, walking through a field holding hands, kids. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm throwing kind of a personal different perspective at it. You know, I've been dating my boyfriend for quite a while, and it has been a longer journey than either of us had ever had planned. And boy, you know, I think that in, you know, traditional community, you know, everyone's like, oh yeah, they assume you're hooking up together, that you're living together. In the Catholic world, we're getting all the criticism, why aren't you married yet? And this suspicion of what's going on at times, even though I think most people should know we're above board. But living a chaste life is difficult both in and outside of marriage. And I always kind of compare it sometimes, like there's a real sacrifice in living chastity inside of marriage and practicing NFP. And I think that sometimes there's a lack of respect for people who are having to wait to get married, and just the judgment, assumption, and criticism that takes place when man, like some of my heroes are people who are living, struggling with same-sex attraction, and they're not acting out on it. People who can't get married right now and they're waiting to have sex till they're married. I think that the growth that takes place in saying no in the spirit of love is so fundamental to developing who we are.
Yeah. I will say that that growth, I think you said the growth that takes place, the growth that can take place. Mm. Because if you embrace that as a sanctifying process, yes, there can be growth. If you resent it, then it can also, you know, and so like NFP in a marriage, for instance, yeah, it can actually be a pretty negative thing depending on how you're approaching it. You know, and you get resentful and you start fighting and you know, and there's all that going on. And you can both be on the same page, both wanting to be doing NFP, but then you let that creep in. Or you may not agree about how stringent you're going to be that month, or, you know, all those things come in.
Well, there's actually a great story about this that you shared from Sam Guzman at the Catholic Gentleman. A huge shout out to the Catholic Gentleman. Groups like the Catholic Gentleman, and also shout out to the Art of Manliness, have really challenged men to grow in masculine virtue. And Sam Guzman's really, you know, very open about his life at times. And this was when we were talking about how basically NFP just stinks and he hates it, but he does it because it's good for him.
Yeah. It's funny. I was at a family party over the weekend. We baptized a bunch of our babies, my baby, my nephew's baby, my niece's baby, so a bunch of babies. We have a prolific family. We're going to take over a small state. Anyway, you know, it's whenever the guys get together, NFP does come up because there's a struggle. We do talk about it. And that idea of I love it and I hate it. Yeah, absolutely. I love it and I hate it and I hate it and I love it because I know it's good for me. I know it's good for my wife. I would never in a million years want my wife on hormonal contraception. All of those things. But, you know, it is kind of fun to get together with a group of guys and just share honest talk.
NFP talk.
NFP talk. You know what? There's so many good jokes about NFP that you can't tell because the people who would get them probably wouldn't think they're funny.
Even more, Sam just talked about like that. And he was honest. He's like, the temper tantrums that have taken place on my end. And he's like, and I did go to confession. Thank you very much. But like, he's like, the child in me would come out when I essentially couldn't get what I wanted.
Right. Well, my wife and I had this conversation the day. She says, that, I was being kind of grumpy about something NFP related, thank you, and she says, well, you doesn't seem like you're being kind of grumpy, and I said, well, I think you're kind of being irrational, you know. And so we just, that kind of conversation, it's real, that's what happens in marriage. But again, there's a conversation that's facilitated there. We're having the conversation, we're talking to each other, we're moving through it and past it. NFP is never going to work without communication,
and that is, I think, at the heart of relationships in general. You know, and you, whether it's a sex life, who's picking up the child a certain time, whether you're, you know, just getting to know each other still and you're trying to make plans and get to know, you know, the different responsibilities or lack of responsibility that other people take. It's just part of who we are. And I think that when we look at civilizations, animals don't converse the way humans do. You know, we're made with intellect and free will, and we're made for community. God is a communion of persons, right? We're made for having children, sharing a family, sharing that family life. And when that interaction on a basic level of communication can't take place and we're just giving into our animal-like instincts, right?
Right.
We've got to learn to take responsibility there.
I would rather have a conversation and struggle and deal with that than have my wife feel like an object of my use. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would much rather fight for her with her sometimes than have that happen in our marriage, for sure.
Isn't that a beautiful statement? That's Chris Mueller. I'm Timmeri Millington. You are listening to Trending. You can find us on YouTube at Trending with Chris and Timmeri, or listen to the show on my website at timmeri.com.